Get 15% off a set of BrakeBest Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Slash Film Daily. Today is Friday, July 19th, 2024. On today's episode of the show, we're going to be talking about the new movie Twisters, and we will present an interview with director Lee Isaac Chung. My name is Ben Pearson. I am an editor at slashfilm.com, and I'm joined on today's episode by Slash Film editor Brad Oman.
Hey, that's me.
And Slash Film staff writer Bill Bria.
I'm the other one.
Hi, Bill. All right, well, guys.
I've never been on the podcast with Bill before. I'm excited.
Okay, all right, excellent. Yeah, we're...
As
we're,
am I, Brad.
You know what they say, if you see it, chase it. And it, in this case, is Brad and Bill being on the podcast at the same time.
And with Ben, we'll call ourselves the Triple Bs.
Okay, well, we've got nicknames galore. We're off to a tremendous start on this.
Do you guys want to just scrap this and start a barbershop tri-tet? I was about to say quartet. I was like, obviously, we need one more person for
You know what? I'm going to leave all of this in. And
good. It's we'll good just... stuff.
We'll double down on it. So let's talk about Twisters, guys. That's what we're here to do today, ostensibly, on this episode of the podcast. Let's get into some general thoughts about this movie before we get into spoilers, just in case people are just curious about our thoughts before we get into any nitty-gritty details. Bill, since you're a guest, let's start with you. What did you make of this new movie?
I had a ball. I've seen it twice now. It's definitely what I was looking for as a fan of the revival 90s disaster genre or subgenre, depending on how you want to look at it. It obviously harkens back to the original Twister from 96, but it, you know, also contains a lot of kind of what I would call a classic Hollywood, crowd-pleasy sort of tropes. In a way that's very charming, and, you know, we'll get into it when we get into the nitty-gritty. It doesn't, you know, necessarily serve every aspect that it brings up fully, but at the same time, it feels, you know, crowd pleasing in a way that feels genuine and not like, oh, we're trying to hit like X demographic, Y demographic, whatever. Mm-hmm. It really does have, it feels like it comes from a place of genuine interest and joy at its subject matter of just, let's make a movie about storm chasers again, tornado galore, you know, mayhem that's happening, but also there's a romance angle, but there's also, you know, interpersonal relationships and stuff amongst the crews. And, you know, it's obviously not breaking any molds, but at the same time, it's the kind of movie that in the blockbuster summer movie landscape that we've been stuck in the last 10 years or so feels like maybe Hollywood forgot how to make. And it's like, oh, no, they definitely remember.
Yeah, yeah, that's a good way to put it. I would say Jeremy Mathai wrote the review for us at Slash Film. I'm going to link to that in the show notes. He has a line in the review where he says, "Twisters has its fair share of clunky dialogue, an endless amount of indiscernible technobabble. Honestly, it's kind of impressive. And even a smidge of contrived melodrama, to be sure. But it balances out these shortcomings with a relentless sense of earnestness and heart that's difficult to resist." And I agree with that assessment. I think there's definitely something to that. Brad, what did you make of this movie?
Yeah, I'm pretty much on the same page. As somebody who has seen the original Twister countless times, I saw it in theaters, saw it at the drive-in, I watched it at home a bunch. This really does a good job of capturing that spirit, and it feels like a blockbuster of a bygone era. It's a real crowd pleaser, and it manages to do so without forcing any of the like the legacy attachments you expect from movies like this. And while it would have been nice, you know, to have like maybe one or two of those, it also is refreshing to have a movie that even though it feels like a quasi remake slash reboot, it still, like, I think works and stands on its own. It has some compelling characters with great performances by Glenn Powell and Daisy Edgar Jones. A fantastic ensemble surrounds them, and the visual effects are absolute stunners here. You know, like, you have just great work and really upgrades from what we saw from the original in 1996, and it's to be expected since it's, you know, nearly 30 years later. So it's just like a really rollicking good time, and like the kind of movie that the big screen was made for. It's just a good time.
Yeah, it seems like when this movie was first announced, you can imagine the sort of heartless, kind of soulless version of it. And this is not that, surprisingly. So I was very pleased to see that this movie seems to be primarily concerned with giving the audience a great time and like just being a fun time at the movies. Like, it has some stuff to deal with, and we'll get into that in a minute, but it doesn't really wallow in its big issues or anything. It just kind of moves from one set piece to the next. So good stuff there. All right. One last thing before we get to spoilers. Brad, you mentioned the sort of connective tissue between this movie and the original film, such as it is. There really isn't that much. I was going to ask you guys if there was anything aside from Dorothy, which appears in the opening scene of this movie, which is the, what would you call it? The scientific tornado measuring technology that existed in the first
data
film.
Data collector, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That makes a brief reappearance in this movie. And then there was a photo in the barn with Maura Tierney's character late in the movie that's, again, we're not really in spoiler territory or anything. It's a very, very quick shot. It was so fast, in fact, that I couldn't even make out who was in the photo. But part of me wondered if there were familiar characters from the original Twister in that picture, and the implication being that maybe the Maura Tierney character was friends with them or knew them in some way. Did either of you see who was in that picture?
So I thought the same thing, and I'm pretty sure the picture is actually, because I believe that's supposed to be Daisy Edgar Jones's character's room, and I think that that's a picture of her with the original team, which we'll talk about more after we dig into the opening scene of the movie. But yeah, I don't think that there were any legacy characters there. However, once we do start digging into spoilers, I do want to bring up the fact that this particular sequence, I think, does indicate how they probably would have intended to bring back a legacy character if they were able to do it.
Mm.
And I will say, just, you know, this is very tenuous, but like, obviously, to put it the best way I know how, the vibes are obviously the biggest connection, I think, between this and the original, you know, in terms of whether it's the tone, you know, the dynamics of the characters and how they relate to each other, which we can get into in the spoiler territory, because that's one of my favorite things about the movie. But also, literally, I mean, they go into the production notes that I have about the color palette of the movie and how they really wanted to match, you know, the visual look of Jan de Vont's work on the first one. And even the fact that, like, there's this vibe between characters of, you know, early in the movie, you know, Daisy Edgar Jones's character, Kate, gets a call from her mother, and, you know, we haven't seen her yet, but it's Maura Tierney's character, and she essentially invites all the crew to, like, come over for barbecue later, which mm-hmm. is the same vibe as, like, Helen Hunt's, you know, mom's, you know, character in that. And so it's Lois Smith, I think it was, right?
And yeah, Aunt Meg, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, Aunt Meg, sorry. So it's like, yeah, it's that same vibe of, like, you know, there's this community that's based around storm chasing, which who knows if that's true, but it's kind of cute that it is.
Yeah. I don't know, Brad. I thought that there was a moment where Daisy Edgar Jones was in her room and there was a photo that was clearly of her and Javi and the, you know, the other characters. But I thought there was a separate photo that the camera lingers on just for a second. I don't know. Maybe I'll have to go back and rewatch and see if that's real. But anyway, if any of our listeners know what I'm talking about or just want to point out that I'm insane, feel free to write us in an email and let us know. Okay, let's get to spoilers. Let's talk in detail about this stuff. So if you've not seen the film, pause the movie or pause the podcast, go see the movie. It's very, very enjoyable. I think all of us would highly recommend checking it out. Glenn Powell's summer continues, boys. The charm offensive continues here. What did you think about Glenn Powell in this movie? Brad, let's start with you.
What a handsome man. No one told me that he was so handsome. No, I mean, he's just great. He manages to, like, be charming and, like, a bit of, like, a cool douche, even though, like, you learn that he's not really like that kind of a douche. You know, he's kind of putting on a front for this YouTube show, and I just like the vibe that he has. You know, he has a little bit of Bill Paxton in him, but also kind of takes it into much more of, like, a cowboy arena, which is it's a lot of fun. I like the style of his team, and yeah, he's great. Like, I mean, I hope that they give him a lot more substantial roles to do, and we don't get sick of him quickly by having Hollywood put him in just, like, anything and everything. You know, I hope that he's the kind of actor who, like, has the wherewithal and, you know, smarts to, like, pick stuff that will really work for him and that will mm-hmm. land, and he won't get overexposed and wear out his welcome too quickly.
Yeah, he seems very aware of the perception of his career and the trajectory and everything, and he seems to be, like, using Tom Cruise as a template for what he wants his career to look like. So I hope that he doesn't fall into any of those traps that you just mentioned, but it sounds like he is certainly aware of that and is trying his best not to. Bill, what'd you think about Glenn Powell in this one?
Oh yeah. No, I've been a Glenn Powell fan since Everybody Wants Some. And he's got such natural, as we've said, charisma, you know, kind of that star power factor, that X factor about, you know, him on screen. And it's, yeah, he's got like a great golden retriever energy or capybara energy, if you want to make that comparison again. But I think what you guys were just talking about made me think of the fact that, like, one of the things that's making him, I think, so successful right now is the fact that he is able to parlay his charisma or his aura, if you will, into a way that it can be regionally specific, but necessarily isn't, you know. And it could be like, he could easily play someone from, you know, the East Coast or Massachusetts, or, you know, from California or from Iowa, or in this case, you know, I think it's was he from Arkansas in this? I think?
Oklahoma or Arkansas. Oklahoma. Yeah, yeah.
I know they're in Oklahoma, but I think he might be from anyway. So he can be Southern coded. And in this way, he definitely plays up the cowboy, you know, nature of himself, but in a way that's distinct from, let's say, Austin Butler, who seems a little trapped in the I'm definitely always from the South sort of thing, unless I'm from Giddy Prime. So, you know, it's this. So you know what I mean?
Oh, man, like, imagine if he had a cowboy accent on Giddy Prime, though.
Are you kidding? I would have flipped. So that's what I mean. It's like Glenn really does seem to have that sort of all-purpose leading man energy that he's really being able to bring to his roles recently. And I think that's why we're having a Glenn Powell summer, because, you know, it's proof in the pudding right there.
Yeah. Yeah. His character is much smarter than the trailers made him seem to be, which I appreciate. Oh, yeah. And I also appreciated the sort of reversal of the fact that, like, his team, which you kind of think are just going to be these obnoxious YouTube people who are the equivalent of, like, Jonas and his team from the original movie, his team actually ends up being the people who are, like, really doing it for the right reasons, whereas Javi and the whole his whole, like, entrepreneurial thing and getting in bed with the wrong people, the business people who are swooping in to buy up the land and sort of I guess profit off of the suffering of the victims of weather phenomenon and things like that. You know, there's just, like, an interesting reversal there that I thought the movie dealt with in a entertaining way.
Yeah, actually, that was one of my favorite things, actually, is how it flipped the script on the storm chasing team dynamic, where it put Kate, who is, you know, our protagonist, on what seems like might be the good team. And you think for a little while that the good team is now the most high tech team, like Jonas's team from the original. And then you have Glenn Powell's team, led by Tyler, who is, like, they seem like a little bit more reckless, a little bit, you know, homegrown. They still have cool gadgets and stuff, but, like, it doesn't seem like they're doing much other than trying to pull off, like, cool stunts, even though Tyler has, like, plenty of meteorological knowledge and interest, but, like, mm-hmm. they're driving their YouTube show. And then I love the flip when you find out, oh yeah, they're working for, like, a shady investor. And then, like, Glenn Powell's team is, like, selling t-shirts and stuff like that to help feed people who need, you know, help after a storm tragedy. And so,
yeah,
that was a great decision in the script to flip the script literally in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. You know, the number one thing that I take away from this movie, because I won't make an argument that it's, like, such a personalized, you know, work of auteurism, because obviously, you know, you could kind of mix and match filmmakers with a movie like this and you would still get essentially the same type of movie. But I think what, you know, Chung really brings to this movie that's so unique, and I think is uniquely him, is that he really does seem to be someone who's into subversion. And I'm not saying he's a subversive filmmaker. I think that's a different distinction. But, you know, after watching Minari and really being worried, because that was, you know, a movie that was coming out in the middle of this Oscar bait season, and kind of knowing the general premise of Minari, I was like, oh, it's going to be one of those movies, capital T, capital M. Mm-hmm. And then when I was watching it, I was so pleasantly surprised where it went, in terms of it did not go exactly where everyone or I expected, in terms of, you know, a kid with an illness movie. And I was seeing a lot of stuff in here, and obviously the biggest one is the one we just talked about, which is the flipping script of the dynamic between the storm chasers. There's a great moment where I think it was Sasha Lane's character sees the storm part of people early on, and she's like, oh, you guys are going to church? Or maybe it was Katie O'Brien's character, but, like, when she said that, I was like, oh, they do look like Scientologists, don't they? but it's this thing of, like, everything, every aspect from them to the way that the romance plays out, which, you know, is starting to get a little bit of heat on Twitter in terms of people being annoyed that there's no climactic clinch. But it's this interest that Chung seems to have in terms of really just undercutting or you know, zigging where most people would zag. Which is really fascinating to me, I think.
I would like to point out, too, they did make an active decision to avoid that, because they shot a kiss between David Edgar Jones and Glenn Powell, and it did not make the cut. So
Interesting. Okay. What do you think about that decision, Brad?
You know, I mean, if anything, maybe like they're hoping to like save like some kind of development for the sequel to like give.
That's what I was thinking.
Have it to like give a little more sizzle in the future, which is it's fine. And plus, it's not as if like you still don't get the inclination that there's something there because the way they're looking at each other in the final shot. And plus, I think that it's slightly less cheesy, as satisfying as the kiss would be, to end with like giving the audience something to like want more of, you know, like they didn't kiss it, but like you get a funny little joke of like, oh, there's storms coming to the airport, which, by the way, I want to say was hilarious to experience the day after there was a tornado that touched down near O'Hare.
Jesus. Wow. Yeah, I think there's actually been like a surprising amount of tornado activity in the country this year, so maybe this movie is not coming out at the best time, but like, I don't know. Is there such a thing as
or
a
is it
time?
The best time?
Or is it? Yeah, yeah,
yeah, yeah. So,
do you guys want to talk about that in terms of the whole, you know, climate change of it all, or not? You know, in terms of whether this movie addresses it or really not.
Yeah, I mean, it does and it doesn't. I feel like they do it in a way where like it plays safe, so they're not upsetting anybody who, you know, is stupid enough to not believe in climate change and global warming. Because I think it's more Tierney who has a line of like talking about how lots more storms happening and things more expensive. And so like, it's vaguely touched upon like without directly addressing the issue. But yeah, I do, part of me like wishes that like the weather speak at least acknowledged somewhat, you know, as far as like what's happening with it and like did tie it in, because there's so much science jargon. Some of it that like it is kind of difficult to understand. Like there's one line that Glenn Powell has where like he says something in realization. I'm like, what the fuck did he just say?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of thought that because they did have that Maura Tierney line in there, that was good enough for the purposes of this movie. Like, it would have maybe felt weird if the movie kind of paused to, like, give a sermon about climate change or something. And obviously, I know that that's a true thing. But, like, I don't know. I just felt like for the purposes of this movie, that sort of checked off that box. But what do you think, Bill?
No, I agree, Ben. I think that one of the biggest aspects that is a positive for me about the movie is the fact that, you know, this is another movie. Obviously, it's coming off the back of the first film from, you know, 20 years ago. But I think it's obviously a good thing to have a adventure movie where the heroes are meteorologists or scientists, you know. Mm-hmm. And even though Jeremy rightfully points out that there's a lot of technobabble in the movie, it's great that they just stuffed it that way in terms of it might make some kids look at it and go, what does that mean? What is that about? How would I get into that? Like, how do I just study that? You know, that sort of thing. It could spark some imaginations, which is, you know, I think positive.
That's definitely what the first one did too. Yeah.
It kind of reminded me of how in Top Gun Maverick, they don't ever say who the,
right.
Who they're striking against in the movie, mm-hmm. you know, kind of keeping it neutral.
Yeah. I just wanted to talk about Daisy Edgar Jones for just a second. I have not seen Where the Crawdads Sing, but from everything that I've heard, she's kind of awful in that movie. And I thought she was pretty good here. I enjoyed that she has that same sort of like, I can read the weather energy that Bill Paxton does in the first movie. And I also really, really liked that the way that this movie handled her backstory and her trauma and stuff. Like, trauma seems to be this buzzword in Hollywood storytelling these days, and I really appreciated the way that her character Kate suffered this loss at the beginning of this movie, where she loses her whole team and her boyfriend, and when she comes back into the mix, she has one pretty understandable moment of sort of flinching, right, when she gets back in the field for the first time, and then she basically puts that behind her and does not spend the entire movie being overly haunted by those memories. And I understand that there's a built-in narrative arc when you build a character around, you know, when you create a character who has been through a traumatic situation, but it feels like a lot of movies right now spend most of their runtimes being really weighed down by that. And I thought Twisters did a good job of avoiding that sensation of feeling like, oh God, this character is just like carrying this burden on her shoulders, and that's the only that's a pervasive feeling throughout the rest of the movie. So I don't know if that resonated with either of you two.
No, it did big time with me, because I was not a Daisy Edgar Jones fan until this movie. I obviously saw her potential, but the only couple of things I've seen her in, including Fresh, which I just did not like as a film overall, I was not convinced. And then going into this, I was like, okay, we'll see how she does. And I was really kind of taken aback by, you know, it's not some sort of revelatory, like, oh my God, best actress of the year. But like at the same time, I think she's to be commended for, like you just said, Ben, taking a role that could have been not thankless, but, you know, annoying. You know, it could have been someone who is always moping, always, you know, oh, my friends, oh, I lost my friends, oh, I don't have a future, whatever. And really,
spoken like somebody
it.
Who hasn't lost anybody in a tornado, Bill.
I know. Well, and it's okay. I apologize to all the tornado losses out there. But it's definitely someone who obviously, you know, could have been a weight, like Ben was just saying, on the movie, sort of an albatross. And yet, I think that I was with her the whole time. And the scene I really wanted to point out is essentially her breakdown scene in the barn, where she essentially just tells Tyler, look, I don't want to, you know, chase this anymore because I'm too guilty. I'm too afraid. I'm, you know, all those emotions that are within her. And, you know, she could have pushed it as an actress there. She could have really gone, you know, turned on all the waterworks and, you know, gone really crazy and broke down and have that be like her character's lowest point. But holding it back and the restraint that she has in that moment really told me a lot about her character. It told me a lot about, oh, okay, Kate is the type of person who holds a lot in, really feels a lot, but at the same time doesn't want to lose control, you know? And it's that thing of like, I watched that scene twice now, and each time I was really affected by it in that way because of her restraint as an actress.
Yeah, similarly, well, the other thing that I also like about her is that she was able to be a character who was like feisty and knowledgeable, but without being overbearing or insufferable about it. Like, she clearly is being playful with Tyler as a character, but she's not being an absolute jerk about it. You know, she's just kind of dishing out the same kind of stuff that he's doing. So I like that dynamic about her too. And she had great chemistry with Glenn Powell too. I feel like they played off each other very well. Their spark was believable. And I think the turn too, when Javi kind of crosses the line and like, you know, brings up the fact that like she was responsible for him losing friends too. Like, you know, like Bill said, like she didn't go for broke there and like have like a breakdown. That's either it's just a real reaction where she just like gathers herself and is pissed and just leaves.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I want to pick up something you just mentioned there, but let's take a break and then we'll be right back. So you mentioned the Javi character, Brad. I was wondering what you both thought about the love triangle aspect of this movie, because I kind of thought that like maybe they could have played that up a little bit more. It felt like they were kind of nodding at a love triangle, but it wasn't like a true one, you know, like it didn't feel like Javi was like a real romantic possibility for the Kate character. What do you think, Brad?
Yeah, I don't think that it's necessarily pushed to be like that. I think if anything, it's probably just one sided in the fact that you could easily see Javi maybe having some feelings for Kate still. And they're complicated by the fact that, you know, they did lose their team because of, you know, her ambitions at the time. And so I think that you can tell that there's maybe something lingering there for Javi, especially the way he's like happy to have her back. But I don't think that there's ever really like an active love triangle where like it's not like Hunger Games, you know, where she's going back and forth and it's like trying to choose between them or anything like that. Mm-hmm. And I was happy with that, actually, because it's you know, the decision that Kate makes is like she realizes that she has an ally and somebody who is passionate and knowledgeable in the same way that she is about storms. And so I think that the way that evolved was really nice, and they didn't like the romance didn't feel ham-fisted, you know. It didn't feel like feel like it was like a Hallmark movie or anything like that.
Oh, totally. And I think that one of the things that again impresses me about this movie and the way it handles its characters and its relationships is that the love triangle aspect isn't for the audience, it's for the characters, in the sense that it's not like you just said Hunger Games or Twilight, like who's she gonna pick, da da da. It's clear, you know, who she has picked and who hasn't she picked, you know, but I think that doesn't stop, you know, a character's feelings for someone. And I really loved picking up on the second watch all of the little, you know, nuances that Anthony Ramos threw into Javi and his the way he feels about Kate, even in the early scene where he's leaving them behind as they go off to chase the storm and he's going to study the data on the truck, and just the way he watches the truck leave. And, you know, it's that I could read in that, you know, body language and the look that he had on his face of like, oh, I really like this woman, but at the same time, she's with a friend of mine. They're together. Like, I can't let myself feel that. And then even an early scene when Javi comes back and pitches her on the radar system of, you know, let's put the three radars around the tornado at the cafe in New York. I was like, there's something that feels datey about this almost. And I don't know where I'm getting that energy. And now, of course, understanding where the movie goes, I'm like, oh, that's why. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really does lend. It's not. Yeah, this isn't like Challengers 2, obviously. It's just, you know, it's a nice dynamic that is, it feels relevant. It feels like it obviously could be there, and it feels like it should be there, even though it doesn't quote unquote have a payoff in terms of a confrontation or, you know, it just feels, it makes it feel a little bit more grounded, really. I think.
Yeah.
Now I do want to set some of the Twister scenes to the Challenger score, though.
That would be, yeah. Challenger score goes with everything.
So, Bill, you mentioned the tech in this movie, and I liked this movie a lot. This movie is also pretty dumb, and I think people talk about the first movie being pretty dumb, and I didn't really feel that as much on my recent rewatch of it, but I kind of feel like this movie is a little dumber than the original. Like, there are scenes in this film where people talk about the left side and right side of a tornado, which is just kind of a silly way to talk about a moving weather phenomenon. And then there's one point where Kate asks Sasha Lane's character, can you rig that thing to collect data? Talking about her drone, which, like, yes, the drone does indeed collect data. That's already the purpose of it. What kind of data are you talking about? Kate did not specify, but Sasha Lane's character is like, yeah, I can do that. I'm like, oh, okay. So, like, some of the, like, as Jeremy mentioned, like, some of the dialogue here is I don't know, pretty iffy. This movie kind of feels pretty empty-headed in a lot of points, even though it does so in that kind of, like, earnest golden retriever type
of
way.
Whenever those things happen, though, I always, like, I cut them a break, because that's probably, like, a studio note saying of being, like, how do we know what they're using the drone for? Like, some idiot in, you know, Montana is not going to understand that. And that's not to say there's a lot of idiots in Montana. I just picked a random state. So don't send your letters, Montana. But
we love you, Montana.
But like a lot of those stupid lines are because they're always trying to over-explain things for the people who are too dumb or aren't paying attention.
Yeah. Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. I felt the same thing, Brett. And I think that it's borne out or balanced out, let's say, about, you know, how much detail. I don't actually know the science here, so I, you know, it could be very, very dumb. I'm not sure. But it feels like they really lean on the detail of Kate's experiment, the solution that they're using, what they're using the rockets for, all that stuff, to sort of mitigate, you know, the little studio notey things of like, oh, that, let's collect the data. It feels honestly like, in a weird way, another throwback 90s element, in the same way that the tech in this, the way they talk about it, the way they sort of brush it off, is similar to how they used to brush off computer tech in the 90s. You know,
yeah.
I'm thinking of hackers, the net, whatever, you know, so.
Yeah, yeah, that's true. I guess speaking of Sasha Lane's character, I kind of felt like the supporting characters can't compete with the supporting characters in the original movie. Like, maybe it's because it feels a little derivative because they're essentially occupying the same types of archetypes as the characters did in that original film. So, of course, it's going to feel a little samey. But as much as I appreciate the sort of deep bench of the cast in this movie, I mean, you got Daryl McCormick, you've got Kiernan Shipka, and those two kind of get wiped out pretty early. But Katie O'Brien and Brandon Perea from Nope, and like some recognizable faces in there, I just felt like, especially having rewatched the original movie so recently, that supporting cast, Brad, you and I were talking about this on yesterday's episode of the podcast. That's like an all-timer, like, legendary bench of supporting roles in that first movie, and I feel like this one kind of it can't quite hold up to that. But I don't know.
It does a good enough job, though.
Okay, yeah, I was wondering, like, if you thought it was effective, even still, those supporting characters, because we don't really get to know much about them, and I don't know. Like, was that an effective use of those character actors for you guys?
Yeah, yeah, I mean,
it's nice to have them there, you know.
Yeah, no, like I also think that, like, when you go back and watch the original Twister, you don't necessarily learn a ton about them either. Like, the most you get, I think, out of one of them is really Philip Seymour Hoffman as Dusty, because that character has such personality. And you see him go from being, you know, a wild guy, you know, spotting off stuff like imminent ruage and talking about the suck zone, to, like, you know, being, like, stressed out and worried when she tells Joe that the tornado is heading toward, you know, where Aunt Meg lives and stuff like that. It's you know, it's a dynamic performance. And here, I think that it's maybe a little more broad from the characters. You know, Brandon Perea is great as Boone. I like his character a lot, especially, like,
yeah,
the way he, like, playfully pouts, you know, about missing out on certain things, and then, you know, Glenn Powell tries to cheer him up. So they're still a good cast, you know. And I'm if anything, I'm kind of glad that they didn't, like, try to exactly replicate what we got in the original Twister, because it's so hard to do. And I think that the team here works rather well. And plus, David Corn Sweat, I did not realize that was him because I'm not super familiar with his work, but I kept thinking, oh man, he looks like Henry Cavill. And then I was like, oh, that's David Corenswet, and he's Superman. So yeah. he was great at being a phenomenal stoic douchebag.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, no, it's great to see that he's got rage, because obviously Superman's hopefully not going to be that. So yeah, it's it's really that. But I think in terms of, just to close off the supporting cast, I feel, just to use an example, I feel about Katie O'Brien in this movie the way I feel about Alan Ruck in the first movie, which is like, it's great to have him there. I love that they turn up. I don't think either one really gets served the best as an actor, but at the same time, on rewatches, you're going to find, you know, a little more moments, nuances, whatever, where it's like, oh yeah, I'm glad you're in this, you know, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And even though they're not like, you know, super popping out as a supporting character.
Yeah. I just noted that there was more individual death in this movie. Like in the first movie, I think Jonas and his driver are some of the only characters to die. But in this movie, we see, I think, at least six people be sucked up into various
three storms. Right at the beginning.
Yeah. So it just kind of makes the whole movie feel more dangerous, I guess. I don't know. Were there any like set pieces or anything that you guys thought were particularly effective? I'm thinking of like the moment where they run out of the rodeo and like take shelter in the pool and all that. I thought that was pretty well done. Was there any like big moment in this movie that
the big one is that the whole set, the rodeo to the motel to the swimming pool, just because I love the detail of the obnoxious couple in the you know, front desk who decide to try to make a go of it in their truck and drive away, and instantly they're just taken up and thrown out. And even though you don't see, you know, actual human figures in that quote unquote death, like, it just feels the most violent and cruel.
By the way, the actor who's playing the man in that scene is Bill Paxton's son.
Yes. So.
Oh, is it? Wow. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I didn't know that.
But yeah, no, I actually, one thing I think I appreciated more about this one is as much destruction and danger there is for the characters in the first one, this one I think does a better job of showing the, like, the injuries and how much more dangerous it is. Because, like, for example, after the opening scene, when Kate loses most of her team, when she walks out of the overpass after it's all over, like, she's very much scraped and bloody from stuff hitting her and stuff like that. And you didn't see that much in the original. There's like, the most prominent one I remember is one of Joe's team who gets like hit by a flying buzzsaw blade, you know, when they're trying to hide after the drive-in tornado sequence. Mm-hmm. But they didn't have a lot of things where like you saw scratches and scrapes. Like, they got dirty and wet, but there wasn't a lot of like injury. And I think this like did a good job of showing more so like the danger that's there from the tornadoes.
Yeah. I only have one other observation that I wanted to make before we throw it to the interview, but did you guys have anything else that you wanted to mention about this movie that we haven't talked about yet?
Well, I did want to mention, because I wrote an article about this and you can go read more detail in full, but did you guys think that maybe they potentially pulled off a Helen Hunt appearance in the movie at any point?
Like, is Helen Hunt literally in this movie?
No, like, did you think that she was going to appear in the movie?
Oh. Well, you know, it's funny, Brad, because when you know, Kate first gets the call from her mother, I did not do too much pre-research on the movie before seeing it the first time, so I didn't know the full cast, and I didn't know Maura Tierney was in it. So I thought, oh, is that going to be Helen Hunt when we finally see her, who's on that other side of that phone? So that was the only time I thought, oh, do we have a connective tissue here?
So there's that, and then also there's a moment when after the first tornado encounter where Kate's back in the field, they're at the motel and she has like a fun, playful exchange with Tyler and her team and his team. And Ben, the journalist who is following Tyler and writing a story on him, asks Kate for her last name in case he mentions her in the story. And she declines to give her last name. And I thought, oh, so they're trying to hide maybe that she's, you know, Helen Hunt's character's daughter. And I figured once we got to the point that like she is clearly going home, that they might have been able, because I didn't know that Maura Tierney was in the movie playing Kate's mom as well, that maybe they figure out a way to like be sneaky and stealthy about it. And when you look at that scene, you can easily see how Helen Hunt could have played the role of Kate's mom, and that would have been like a safe haven for her, and she understands what she's going through. And it's funny, Ben, that you mentioned the pictures on the wall, because that would have been a perfect time for them to show pictures of the legacy cast on the wall of the house where Joe lives, you know, to have that little throwback. And so I wonder if it was there in the script in case they were able to get Helen Hunt, but it just didn't work out.
You know, this could have been a Skyfall situation, in the way that famously Albert Finney's character from Skyfall was originally written to be Sean Connery.
Right, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Bill, was there anything that you wanted to mention that we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah, I have to talk about the soundtrack album. Awesome. I mean, it's so great to have a summer movie soundtrack album just packed with original songs that artists were commissioned for. I went to my second viewing of the movie was this IMAX live Q&A thing that they were live streaming from Lincoln Center. I live in LA, so I wasn't, you know, physically present with the actual cast in Lincoln Center IMAX, but we got to see the same live stream. But before that, they had a pre-show, and I didn't realize that they shot at least 4 or 5 separate music videos for 4 or 5 different cuts off the album, which is crazy. That's more than, you know, Top Gun got from 1986, you know? So it's like, I don't know where they're showing these videos, because I don't think music television is a thing anymore. So they're probably just all, you know, YouTube stuff. But I think if you can go online and search almost, you know, any of the major cuts from the album, like you'd find
is it the kind of music videos where like they shot the band in a field and like there's wind and debris blowing
yeah,
around?
Yeah, one of them is, but like some of them are kind of elaborate where it's like there's all kinds of Twister activity around, you know, there's Miranda Lambert's one, I think looks like a car commercial because it kind of also is, maybe she did a deal with Ram.
Because the movie is also a car commercial. Essentially, again, Dodge Rams and vans and all that stuff, like they're all over this movie.
yeah. But again, it's just it really does feel like they really put a lot of effort into the throwback nature of this in terms of let's kind of bring back a 90s blockbuster vibe, and you know, good on them for giving me the nostalgia.
Yeah, as somebody who is not really into country music, I was kind of dreading the music in this movie, but I actually thought it worked really well, and it wasn't that kind of like, I don't know, ultra twangy country that really rubs me the wrong way. It had more of a folksy vibe to it, and I again, like, I'm not going to talk about music in this way because I don't pay enough attention, especially to that side of the country Americana, whatever you want to call that categorization of music. But I was pleasantly surprised. I'll just leave it at that.
There were a couple songs that I was just like, I don't know about that. But for the for the most part, the soundtrack was solid.
Yeah, and mentioned Walfish's score really has some nice, I think even Williams-esque moments with Kate's theme and stuff like that.
Yeah, I love the piano motif that he did whenever she got into her like tornado vision mode.
Yeah, very cool. The only other thing I had written down was shout out to Paul Scheer, who was hilarious in an extremely small role at the very end of this movie. His face coming into frame in the window and his delivery of like, what are you doing? It's just hilarious. I just love that. So he has, I don't know, maybe like 45 seconds of screen time in this movie, but he really made the most of it. And I really appreciated that.
I don't know. I know that at one point he was a pretty loyal listener to Slash Film Daily. So Paul, if you're listening, you were great.
Yes.
You were great. Awesome. And please do a How Did This Get Made episode all about your cameo.
Oh, that would be incredible. Yeah. All right. Well, I think that'll do it for now. So let's go ahead and throw to Bill's interview with Lee Isaac Chung.
Thank you so much for the film. Ironically enough, I drove past a tornado when I was in my youth growing up in Michigan. So I know when tornadoes can kind of come and confront you like that. And one of the things that struck me so much about the film is the way that you portray the power of nature. In fact, one of my favorite shots is when Kate sees that waft of air go through the wheat field. And so I was wondering if you could talk about how you decided to depict nature as a force in this movie, maybe using that shot as like, how did you get that shot?
Yeah, I was constantly just looking for ways to show not just the tornadoes, but the effects of the tornadoes and storms. And often those are rendered within the details in the space and the environment. That particular shot was a wheat field, an actual wheat field that we used, but we couldn't get the wind to actually do that. Yeah. So that is actually CGI that's helping us with that visual play of the wheat. But there are some other shots where we really had a helicopter go through different wheat fields, and we were using some of that as our as the effects of the way that the wind works. And that moment where inside of her mind, she's seeing a tornado, a cloud that's forming, and we go through a wheat field and we go up to the sky, for instance. That was stuff that we were getting with our aerial shots and footage.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So yeah, it was a fun, like on the side of this movie, a side project within it was almost like a documentary of just trying to capture weather events and nature and the beauty of nature. And we even had this actual storm chaser, Sean Casey, who was going out and filming supercells and storms, hail, things like that for us.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so it was a fun process of working. Very few films, I feel, offer that kind of opportunity to work and nerd out and geek out about something natural.
Yeah, you know? And it's our world, so it's just so beautiful
exactly.
to see.
Yeah.
The other side of this film that I really responded to is the romance angle and, you know, how charming it is. It brought me back to not just like Hallmark movies, but also like, you know, movies of the 30s and 40s, you know, screwball comedies even. Mm. Was there a particular cinematic template or even television that you had in mind for the central dynamic of Kate and Tyler and Yavi there? Or?
Yeah. You mentioned the 1930s films, and that's something that I was definitely watching a lot. I was looking at a lot of screwball stuff like Howard Hawks. And seeing the way Capra as well, looking at the way that they would tell their stories of various characters and their relationships changing, ultimately to come to the ending that happens in this movie. I kind of give a nod to the rom-com with the airport.
Yeah,
and that's all intentional, just to let the ending have a cheeky sort of nod to that genre.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I love it. And then just to wrap up. So much of this movie is about facing your fears. What would you say for yourself as a filmmaker was like the biggest fear going into this, and did you overcome it, did you think?
I wondered if I could do this or not, or if I would be consumed. And I wondered if it was it was a little bit like Kate going into that tornado. And the more that I feared it, the more that I would channel it into the work and into the story, into elements of the story. And I just went into it. And at the very beginning, when I was considering whether I should do this project or not, I felt very much afraid. And I let that be the reason to drive me to do it. Because I felt like if I go into it because I'm scared, it's going to change me in some way. And I wanted that. I wanted to experience that journey personally. So now I'm at the other side of it. And I hope this film will do all right and that people will enjoy it. And that's where I will feel much relief.
Well, if it means anything, I had a huge amount of fun with it.
Oh,
I was a huge fan of the first film, and I just was enjoying myself so much. So.
Oh, that's very cool to hear. That's really promising. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for making it.
Thanks so much.
And it's great to meet you.
Yeah, great to meet you, Bill.
All right, guys, I think that's going to do it for today's episode of the show. You can find much more about Twisters at slashfilm.com, like literally a lot of articles. So go there and check it out. I will link to a few of them in the show notes. Slash Film Daily is published every weekday, bringing you the most exciting news from the world of movies and TV, as well as deeper dives into the great features you can find on the site. You can subscribe to the show on Apple, Overcast, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Send your feedback, questions, comments, concerns, and mailbag topics to us at bpearson@slashfilm.com. Make sure to leave your name and general geographic location in case we mention your email on the air. Don't forget to take a minute to rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. That truly helps us out a lot. Tell your friends about this show any way you can. Thank you so much for listening, and we will talk to you all on Monday.
Get 15% off a set of BrakeMess Select, Select Pro, or Import Direct brake pads and two rotors now at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.